Lesbian and Gay Voices serves the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered community and other intelligent and talented people. Coming up next, we have Dr. Mel White's keynote speech from the 1994 Creating Change Conference that was held in Dallas in November. Perry Jude Radishek, the retiring executive director of the NGLTF, introduces Dr. White.
Good morning, everyone. Again, I'm Perry Jude Radishek, the executive director at the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. At the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, we believe that coming out is one of the most important things that people can do to free themselves and to free our movement. Our next speaker's coming out process has helped to change the hearts and minds of the American people. Dr. Mel White has moved from evangelical Christianity to becoming one of our movement's greatest activists. I've had the pleasure of meeting Mel White about a year ago, and being a spiritual person myself, growing up Catholic and still practicing, having another movement activist who he himself brings his spirituality into play, into his work, is so important to me as it is to other people who still practice our spiritual beliefs, whatever they are. Bringing that spiritual passion into the movement is something that is so important to us, and it brings a passion and energy that no one can deny. Mel has been certainly an author and a ghostwriter for some of the people who hate us. But Mel's process from moving from that world into our movement, again, has changed the hearts and minds of America. Since his book's release, Stranger at the Gate, to be Gay and Christian in America, he has been traveling the country and speaking out against the anti-gay rhetoric and hate-mongering of the religious radical right. Mel has done a lot for our movement in terms of anti-gay and lesbian violence. He has been traveling the country, speaking out against the murders here in Texas, speaking out against the murders in Mississippi, speaking out against the violence that our community suffers and faces every day of our lives. And it is my pleasure to introduce to you our keynote speaker this morning, Dr. Mel White, who is my friend and one of our movement's greatest leaders. Thank you.
My partner, Gary Nixon, gave me the greatest Halloween card. It showed pictures of masses of people carrying Rush Limbaugh for president in 1996 signs. And inside it said, this is the scariest card I could find. Happy Halloween. We laugh, but after Tuesday, we know it could happen. And that's why we're here, working, plotting, planning, doing our best to create the kind of change that won't let it happen. Dan Rather, during this campaign, asked a person on the street, what's the biggest problem this election year? Is it ignorance or is it apathy? And the person said, I don't know and I don't care. You are the people who know. You are the people who care. But we're not here simply to stop Rush Limbaugh. We have a much greater task. And when I think of that task, I always try to have a picture in my mind of who I'm working for when I'm out across the country or organizing locally or making the phone calls or signing, getting the petition signed. I try to think of pictures. And this past 6 months, I've had one picture in mind that said, why am I doing this? It's the picture of a 15-year-old boy in New Orleans, a Catholic, gay youth who went to his father and mother for acceptance and understanding and found judgment, who went to his priest for acceptance and understanding and found judgment, who went to his teacher for acceptance and understanding and found judgment. And so, just this year, he put a plastic sheet down in a cemetery, in a funeral home parking lot. And on a note he left, he said, "So I won't be any more trouble to anyone." He took that life so filled with potential. I tell you why I'm doing it. I'm doing it for him. I'm doing it for all those little ones, our next generation, who live under this rhetoric in this polluted, polluted air and want only to breathe freely. We are doing it for justice, not to keep Rush Limbaugh or the radical right out of the presidency, but we're doing it for justice. And it's going to take all we have in terms of loving each other to do like Amos said, to let from this place justice roll down like mighty rushing waters. How do we accomplish it? I am not a guru. You have taught me more than I could ever teach you. But I'll tell you, there's two things shaping up in my mind. One, we have to tell the truth about them. And two, we have to tell the truth about us. Then maybe with John Wycliffe, we can say in the end, truth will conquer. I'm no Pollyanna. I know truth has suffered a terrible loss as of Tuesday. But we also knew who put Newt Gingrich and who put Jesse Helms and who put the rest into that place of power and leadership. It was our old friends, my old clients from the radical right. How many times do I need to apologize to you for working for them? No, I'm serious. I feel so bad. I wrote Jerry Falwell's autobiography. Autobiography. I'm sorry. I thought they were right at the time. I was living in self-loathing and doubt, thinking God had deserted me, thinking I was a sinner obsessed. Thank God, those days are over. I went to them for 18 months, each of them by telegram and by fax, trying to say to them, what you're saying about gay people, what you're saying about lesbians, bisexuals, transgendered people, what you're saying about us is wrong. Please talk to me privately. In the spirit of Matthew 18:15, Jesus said, if your brother or sister has aught against you or you them, you go to him in private. So I went and I went and I went. They wouldn't respond. Only Pat Robertson responded with a computer-generated letter that said if I would join the 700 Club, I could be cured. I tried that. Now what do? We are outnumbered 100-1 simply by Pat Robertson's Christian Coalition. They have more money and more power in a week than we have in all our groups together in a year. What secret weapon then have we to win this war against them, against Pat and Ralph Reed, Jerry Falwell Kennedy, James Dobson, Schlafly, LaHaye, Lon Mabon, Lou Sheldon, even Paul Cameron and outside Freddie Phelps? What can we do to stop them? This early American proverb says it all. Tell the truth and shame the devil. We must first tell the truth about the radical right. I grew up in an evangelical Christian home in Santa Cruz, California. All my life I heard sermons in my church and Sunday school lessons saying social action is wrong for Christians. My father was mayor of the city, but he never would have thought to use his position to superimpose his own moral or spiritual views on anybody in that electorate. Now all of that has changed. Fundamentalist Christians have gone from winning souls to winning elections. What they couldn't do through revival meetings, they are attempting now to do through Congress and the courts, through school boards and city councils, through petition drives and local initiatives. Precinct by precinct, the new American Christian fundamentalist is trying to take spiritual and moral control of the nation, and Tuesday was a rather frightening example of their success. One of my seminary professors said, fundamentalism is orthodoxy gone cultic. Cultic leaders like Jim Jones or David Koresh, Pat Robertson or Jerry Falwell, know that most people in our country feel confused. They feel afraid. They feel under siege. They don't know where their next meal is coming from. So they build enclaves for these poor, frightened people, enclaves like Jonestown or the ranch in Waco. Come to us, they say, and feel safe again. It's a terrible trade, giving up freedom for safety. But it is exactly what the radical right is offering. Let us rule, they promise, and we will make the nation safe again. Let us decide what is moral and what is immoral, and we will purge this country of its sin. The urge to purge is basic to fundamentalism everywhere. Whether you're a fundamentalist Muslim blowing up Jewish children in Tel Aviv, or you're a fundamentalist Jew shooting Muslim worshippers at the tomb of Abraham, or you're a fundamentalist Christian shooting down abortion doctors in Pensacola, it is the urge to purge, to clean up, to save. That's not a bad urge, actually. We have the same, you know. We want to clean up. We want to save. We want to do good. But in evil hands, that urge becomes tyranny. On PBS Tuesday night late, I channel surfed and found on PBS Ralph Reed sitting in the place of power. Ralph Reed, they clean up nicely, these fundamentalists. He's so cute. But remember, though gay rhetoric, anti-gay rhetoric now will decrease, if not disappear, their goals remain the same. Remember, nothing has changed. They've just put on the suits. Jerry Falwell said, and it was quoted in Newsweek magazine just a few weeks ago, one day gays and lesbians will be annihilated in this country and great will be the rejoicing in heaven. Ralph Reed said, we're going to get really quiet about gay talk, but know this, that at the heart of our movement is still the urge to abolish abortion and to abolish homosexuality. Now, I tell you, I know them. I wrote their autobiographies. They are sincere. And to win our battle with them, we must understand their sincerity and where it leads. I say to tell the truth about them, we have to say they are the activists who threaten the value of this nation. Yes. It is their agenda. It is their agenda that undermines the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the American family. And it is their demand for special right to superimpose their views on the rest of us that must be confronted. Leaders on the radical right do not believe in democracy, but in theocracy. God should rule the nation. Until God does it, we'll do it for him. They don't believe in the separation of church and state. Only fundamentalist Christians are suitable to govern. And they don't believe in the Bill of Rights. The First Amendment, for example, Congress shall make no laws to establish religion. When they say we are a Christian country with moral absolutes, they are saying Christian fundamentalism, our version and its ideology must prevail. The Constitution promises freedom of speech. yet they want all opposing voices silenced, especially ours. You know I'm nervous today, don't you? I'm dry-mouthed and nervous. And I'm sitting here thinking why. Because this is the group I finally wanted to be with all my life, and now I'm here. And I know how conflicted some of you are about me. That's okay, I've been conflicted about me a long time, longer than you have. The Constitution promises freedom of speech, yet they want us silenced. The Constitution promises freedom of the press, that they want the liberal media closed down and the shelves of the nation's libraries stripped of our periodicals, of our authors, and of our biographies. That's my partner, Gary Nixon. He knows. The Constitution promises freedom of assembly, yet they want our parades canceled, our rallies shouted down, and our churches closed. They don't believe in pluralism, the right to disagree with dignity. They don't believe in women's right to choose. They don't even believe in women. Except as an occasional talk show hostess. They don't believe in the church or the clergy, by the way. There is anti-religious is a lot of you. You got reason to be, they don't. That's why they're starting denominations of their own, by the way, and if your pastor is wearing a 700 clip pin, you might remind her of where this is all leading. You should listen to them criticize churches and denominations, saying if your pastor doesn't do this, if your denomination doesn't do that, they don't believe in clergy. And they don't believe in biblical or theological education, let alone higher criticism or serious biblical exegesis. That's why quoting John Boswell to them is a waste of time. They don't believe in freedom of the arts, censorship is in, but especially they don't believe in us. In fact, many of the leaders want us dead, and some of them are honest enough to admit it. I was in Seattle 4 months ago on a 50,000-watt station, and the pastor said to me, have you ever read Leviticus 20? I hate that. When they say, have you ever read it? Yes, I was haunted by it in Hebrew for 25 years. What does it mean to you, pastor? And he says, it means you should be killed. And I said, are you saying all gays and lesbians should be killed? Notice I threw in lesbians.
You're listening to Lesbian and Gay Voices. You're hearing the keynote address by Dr. Mel White of the Cathedral of Hope in Dallas, speaking at the 1994 Creating Change Conference.
We need you badly. And he said, yes, you should be killed. And I said, who should do the killing? You churches? And he said, no, that's the civil authorities' jobs. That's why we need to get more good men of God elected into government. And so I said to the people of Seattle on 50,000 clear watts, you've heard him say it. Call him and tell him it isn't true. The switchboard lit up. And you know what every caller said? It is true. You should be killed. I say the best way to show the American people their extremism is to simply quote them back. I'm glad for Phelps out here picketing me and picketing you. It's an honor for that man to picket us. Because every time he opens his mouth, we win again. And that's the point, isn't it? Isn't that the point of telling the truth about who they are? The more we quote them back to the American public, the more the American public will recoil in shock and horror, whatever they feel about gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people. Now, in passing, watch out for the promise keepers. Read yesterday's USA Today about angry men winning the elections across this country and put that together with the Promise Keepers. Remember, the Promise Keepers is founded by Coach Bill McCartney, the man behind Amendment 2 in Colorado. Remember that the driving force behind the Promise Keepers is a man who hates gay and lesbian people. Remember that all their talk about loving your wife and loving your family and bridging the races is founded on the radical rights agenda. Listen to their rhetoric and tell American people what they're saying. In passing, have you read anything about the National Militia? We have the handbook. One of our spies brought the handbook. It's a fundamentalist Christian army forming to protect the truth and those who proclaim it. Perhaps you've seen the military handbook, one of the most frightening misuses of the Bible since Jerry Falwell was keeping African Americans out of his church in the 1960s. Automatic weapons are named, and fundamentalist Christians are given the scriptural background for how to learn to use them. Watch the National Militia closely and tell the American people about it. Watch also for this growing debate amongst Jews about conservatives. Finally, American Jewry is beginning to realize that Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson have been using them all the time. Be sure to read the Anti-Defamation League's brilliant new study of the religious right. It's called The Assault on Tolerance and Pluralism in America. No one has seen more rewards from Jewish organizations than Jerry Falwell. No one. I've seen them on his wall. But his urge to purge, his urge to convert, is the worst kind of anti-Semitism ever. Tell it the way it is. When Gary and I went to fast for a week in front of Focus on the Family because we didn't know what else to do, we'd been monitoring them for 2 years. The stuff coming out of that place was so bad, 50 million parcels of it a year. So we just sat there and began to fast. All we took with us was some Gatorade and 11 pages of quotes from Dobson and his guests. When they saw those quotes, they came unglued. Tell the world what they're saying. It will be enough. I love Harry Truman. He said, I never gave them hell. I just told them the truth, and they thought it was hell. Now, this is my goal for us, for America, for our brothers and sisters. I'm old enough to remember Joseph McCarthy, and there is a day, I have it in Kinescope. Joseph McCarthy was red baiting everywhere, just like Phelps and all his colleagues, Falwell and Robertson, are gay baiting everywhere. And the Americans went around along with it for a while. And then one day, without any particular reason, another senator at that desk stood up, folded his papers, and muttered under his breath so that the whole world could hear, Joe, have you no shame? And he walked away. One by one, the other senators finally had the courage to fold their papers and walk away as well. They walked away and left Senator McCarthy ranting, and one day, if we keep telling the truth, the American people will walk away and leave Falwell and Robertson ranting. That's my prayer. Now, in the meantime, what do? We not only tell the truth about them, we got to tell the truth about ourselves. No, first, there's another side to truth about them. There's a difference between Falwell and Robertson and those who follow. It's a big difference. Those who follow are my mom and dad. And in many cases, your moms and dads, your gramps and grandmas, your kids even. These are not evil people. These people don't want to overthrow the Constitution. These people are afraid. They're like me. For 35 years, I thought I was evil. For 35 years, I was wrong. If I can change, anybody can change. My dad said, when we first came out, you're filled with the devil. And my mom said, you're an abomination. But you're still my pride and joy. Last month, my mom and dad went to the PFLAG convention in San Francisco. PFLAG! PFLAG! Do not hate the followers. And we mustn't confuse. On a talk show the other day, somebody called and said, "You're tarring us all with the same brush." And I said, "You're right, and I'm wrong. Forgive me." Now, what is the truth about ourselves? You know, they're racist, and they're sexist, and they're patriarchal, they're misogynist, they're all those things. But so are we. You don't know how long it took me to learn to love some of you. I came in terrified of some of you until I learned who you are, until I learned the truth about you. And then 17 earrings and one ear didn't bother me anymore. In fact, I'm thinking of getting pierced. The way people learn about the truth is to learn about us. When I first came out, I heard there was a queer church in North Hollywood, MCC something or other, and I spent 3 Sunday mornings driving around that American Legion Hall, afraid to go in. And then I went in, first through a cordon of smoke. Everybody was standing at the edges smoking, and they all looked like mafia. And I went in and I sat down and I thought, where am I? I was wearing a double-breasted suit and I looked weird. I still feel weird amongst you wearing a tie, but I felt like, shoot, I'm polyester, go with it. So I went into that church finally, and Ken Martin, a pastor who was once a Southern Baptist seminary professor, married to Miss USA. Okay, we all have things to overcome. He stood up and began to preach about God creating lesbians. Really? God creating gays? Really? I sat for 5 weeks every Sunday and cried through the whole service. If they took an offering, I cried. If they read a scripture, I cried. If they preached, I cried. Something was happening to me. Something was being renewed in me. And I began to meet the mafia. They were just leather folk. They did the flowers and the vestments. I began to see that my lesbian sisters were brighter than I and more experienced than I, and so important to me to understand what life was about on the other side after being victims of a patriarchal sexist system for so long. I learned from Ken Martin and Wendy Foxworth. I learned from Troy Perry and from Darlene Garner and elders like Nancy Wilson. And I'm learning from our pastor, my boss at the Cathedral of Hope, Michael Piazza. Please, don't spread the rumor I'm the pastor there anymore. Michael Piazza is the pastor there. He's the one who came to Laguna Beach when I was walking the beach saying, "What the hell am I going to do with my life?" and said, "I got a plan for your life. Come to Dallas. We can't pay you, but we can just come to Dallas." But I learned from these on the spirit side what it means. And then, you know, the second place I went, because Ken Martin told me, I went to the Creative Change concerts, Creating Change Con. What do you call it? This up here in Los Angeles. And I walked in again in my double-breasted suit. And I walked around all alone. Well, Gary came with me the second day, and we were looking at all of you hugging in the restaurants and around the tables. We saw you crying when you learned someone that you loved and didn't know had died during the year. We saw you plotting and dreaming and scheming, and we sat at the edges. I went in to take a conference from the king of sound bites, Robert Bray. And I really thought I knew something about sound bites. So he said, give me a sound bite. So I gave him one, and he gave it back four times better. Then I went to a conference on rural organizing from Scott Nakagawa, and I said, oh my God, it's not talk that's going to win this battle. It's getting out on the streets. It's going door to door. It's using the phones. I learned so much from Scott. Then I stumbled into my new diva, Suzanne Farr. She didn't have a clue who I was, and she was up there talking about Falwell and Robertson, and I was getting lower and lower in my chair. And finally she said to me, what do you do? And I said, well, when I told her, she didn't laugh. She sat down beside me. I'll never forget this, Suzanne. You sat down beside me, and you looked in my eye, and you said, tell me about yourself. And I told you where I was on this terribly difficult journey. And you said, you could really be important to us, you know. That's the first time I thought maybe God had a sense of humor. But maybe she had me going through all this crap so that one day I could do something useful with my life. Suzanne said, you can be a help to us. Then I met Irva Shebade. Irv said after conference, come here. I've learned to say yes, ma'am, since then. And I've been saying it to Perry Jude and to Tori and to Irva Sheet and all these others for long. Anyway, she took me into a restaurant, little tiny restaurant, and said, are you a Christian still? I love the way Irv beats around the bush. And I said, what's a Christian, Irv? And she said, you know, like your buddies. And for the first time, I realized I was not a Christian anymore. And I said to Irv, after thinking about our community, the little ones, the angry ones, the mean ones, the damaged ones, the dysfunctional ones. I thought about our community, this new family of mine, trying to let each other live and to love each other, loving, trying to be together for each other with all our damage and still stand for justice. I realize I am not a Christian anymore. I'm a member of a family struggling back to help. And we come from all kinds of spirit communities. And I'm just one of those who is trying my best to follow an itinerant Jewish rabbi. Look, if we tell the truth about ourselves, we're going to have to tell about all kinds of things we don't want people to know. We do molest children, but only in our percentage of the population. We do abuse each other from time to time. We are imperfect. In fact, I'm beginning to realize we do have an agenda and that we do want traditional values to be tested and that we do have a new definition of the American family. We are a people and drawn together by spirit. What can we do? Look what we can do. I love this new biography about Leonard Bernstein. In the lobby, during an intermission of the New York Philharmonic, one matriarch says to another, did you hear? Lenny's a queer. And the other one answers without missing a beat, isn't there anything that man can't do? The other day when the European Economic Community came out to all of its member states and said no more discrimination against gay and lesbian people, we've got to recognize their domestic partnerships legally. Pope John Paul II almost fell out of his window. Giving all that, when I was in jail with Patricia Ireland in December, she said, if you're going to be fighting the religious right, remember half of them live in Rome. And he did all that stuff. He did all that stuff. And then he went down to celebrate the restoration of the Sistine Chapel, painted by gay brother Michelangelo to the music of Leonard Bernstein's Mass. We write the songs that make the whole world sing. We are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered people. We're black and white. We're people of color and colorless folks like myself. We are all of you. We are old and young. We are perfectly abled and differently abled. We're from Human Rights Campaign Fund, and we're from Victory Fund, and we're from GLAAD, and from NGLTF, and we're from ACT UP, thank God, and from Queer Nation, and from Lesbian Avengers. We are together trying to find our way, and if we keep telling the truth about them and about ourselves, one day, as Emile Zola said, truth will be on the march, and nothing can stop it then. Amen.
Dr. Mel White, pastor at Cathedral of Hope Metropolitan Community Church of the Resurrection in Dallas, Texas.